The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure, high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online, on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
Right. So here's what I recommend if you're going to have an interview or talk to a reporter. So the first thing is you come up with 3 points that you want to talk about.
Ahead of time.
Okay. Right? These are the 3 things that I want to talk about. Then the next thing you do is for each of those points, you find a way to make yourself more memorable or more quotable. Okay. So an easy way to do that is start with the letter A. So the first A is acronym, right? Earlier today, we were talking about COVID. What is COVID? Coronavirus Disease 2019.
Right, a lot of people don't know that.
We've been saying it since February or March, but in November, no one ever heard of it.
Right.
But a lot of people, we don't even call it COVID-19 anymore. We just call it COVID.
Right. Because it's synonymous.
Right. But that's an example of an acronym. If you can invent your own acronym, then you will have to explain it to the reporter.
Right. Is that good or bad?
That's a good thing.
Okay.
That's a good thing.
Okay, good. So you create your own acronym in the area in which you're talking about.
Right.
Okay.
So you start with the letter A. Okay. And the next A after acronym is anecdote. So you think of something that you can give an example. What did I just do? I gave you the example of the client alert that I turned into an article in several different industry publications.
Right. And it was common and relatable and something that the average person deals with all the time.
Right.
Okay.
Then there's analogy. You can say that something is as clear as day or as clear as mud.
Okay.
So we have acronym, anecdote, analogy, alliteration.
Okay. What's alliteration? Like what, how it's
alliteration?
Written? Clearly
when they all written? Start with this alliteration, when they all start with the same letter, which I just did. Letter A.
Okay, good.
Right?
Yeah.
Acronym, anecdote, analogy, alliteration. They all start with the letter A. Now you're going to remember it.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit BeinhackerLaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
When you see someone in the news talking about your area of business, do you think, why are they talking to her and not me? I'll tell you why. Reporters call the people they know. They don't call you because they don't know who you are and what you have to say and why anybody else should care. If you want to be that person who's quoted in the news, talk to me, Janet Falk, public relations and marketing communications professional.
All right, Janet, thanks for coming on. I know that we We've been trying to schedule this for a while. And I think, I don't remember, it was me that rescheduled the first, or you did, and then I did. And then I had this, that coronavirus outbreak, and it was, I could have done it from home, but I was kind of thrown out of my upstairs studio because I had to use that area for my daughter to quarantine herself. But I appreciate your patience, and I also appreciate your help with, you know, with my media profile, which we're going to talk a little bit about as we get into this. But maybe you want to go back and tell us about your background, where you're from, educational history, how you got into public relations, and we can talk about all that stuff that you're doing.
Great, Mitch. I'm very happy to be here, and I'm so glad to hear that your daughter has recovered fully from her episode with COVID.
Thank you.
So, so to begin at the very beginning, I am a born and bred New Yorker. Although I grew up in the suburbs and went to college out of town, went to graduate school out of town, and came back to New York when my husband got a job here in the city. Okay. I've worked in several different fields. And if you look at my website, you'll see that my logo is the letter F inside an octagon. Okay. I view myself not as a round peg, not as a square peg, but as an octagonal peg, because I haven't had a traditional career path. I've worked in academia, Wall Street, nonprofit, public relations agencies, and law firms, and now I have my own practice. So you can see that there are many threads to my experience, which really redounds to the benefit of my clients.
Sure.
I have an approach that I can analyze the situation and figure out who is on the other side, what is it that is their problem or their point of pain, and how my client represents a solution that can help them address that problem and move forward. So so there you have it, how I have worked in, you know, as a college professor of Spanish language and literature.
Oh, it wasn't even like you were a professor of marketing. It was totally
completely different. And then through a course of study that was an accelerated executive MBA, I learned about finance and accounting. I worked on Wall Street as a securities analyst. And from there, I took another class in investor relations, which seemed to me to be like teaching, because right. I was explaining what was important about the operations of a company and the market outlook and how the stock was going to perform. So I worked at public relations agencies for a number of years and then went in and out of different Wall Street related firms in investment banking, research, fixed income, private equity and venture capital.
Oh, so you have a very diverse background, but it all kind of fits together, right? I mean, you're in Wall Street and then you start doing investor relations and then you got your MBA, or not in that order, but and then you kind of evolved into, like a lot of people say, hey, I'm good at this. I have a career. I can do my own thing and be a, you know, run a consultancy, basically is what you're doing, right?
Right. And what I often say is that people have hired me not because I know about their business. In most cases, I don't know very much about their area of business.
Right at the beginning.
But I have the ability to get my arms around it and understand it and pick it apart and figure out what needs to be done next. And then help them to, what I like to say, raise the flag so that they can be noticed and seen as a resource. And again, as a solution to someone else's problems.
So you're doing more public relations than marketing, right? Because I always talk to people like the difference. I've had other public relations people on the show. People bring me inventors and business people on the show. But I always talk about this, about people understanding, and maybe you can talk about it, the difference between public relations and publicity versus marketing. They're different, right?
Right. I've often been asked to comment on this. In fact, I give a presentation to classes taught by a colleague of mine who teaches marketing as to what is public relations and how does it work.
Right.
Now, public relations is a strategic communications process that develops mutually beneficial relationships between an entity and its publics. Now, what is the entity? It could be an individual, it could be a corporation, it could be a nonprofit, it could be many things. But who are its publics? Its publics are its current clients, its prospective customers, its regulators, legislators, elected officials in the community, the neighbors, the vendors, even the employees.
Right. So it's really your goal or your opportunity to be heard.
Right.
Right. To be a, not necessarily a thought leader, but certainly promoting your thoughts.
Right, there, right, right, right. In a way that is a process and mutually beneficial. Now, marketing, on the other hand, is directed towards a transaction.
Right. Right. You're marketing your services or your products.
Right, right. And, you know, and there's an exchange of value, right? Money or time for a given value.
Right. And marketing can be social media posting. It could be traditional advertising. It could be billboards. It could be mailers. It could be whatever. Yeah. That's not really public relations.
Well, social media is rather fluid because you could be talking about raising awareness of an issue and then, you know, getting people involved with the organization, asking them to donate to the nonprofit organization. Right. You're not asking them necessarily to buy a widget.
Right. So that would be more on the public relations side, less on the marketing side, if you're not asking them to buy, if you're just, you know, putting information out there or whatever.
Right, right. As I said, mutually beneficial relationship and process.
Okay, good. So we could talk about more broad, you know, small business ownership and so forth, but you specialize in the legal profession. I think that's why we were introduced, right?
Right.
You work with small law firms, you work with solopreneurs, maybe you work with larger law firms. How did that come about where you ended up as a law firm specialist?
Okay. My last paid employment was at a public relations agency whose principal client was one of the AmLaw 50, one of the largest law firms. And my role was to get the attorneys quoted in the news as often as possible. And dealing with attorneys was very interesting to me. I had dealt with attorneys before, but not at a law firm.
And, okay.
Attorneys, being an attorney yourself, you understand, always have opinions, always have insights, always know how things could be done better.
Right.
And I found it very engaging to talk with them and to look for opportunities where they could comment on the issue of the day or what they saw as an issue that was very complicated and people need to know more about it, but no one was paying attention to it. And thereby they could, as I said, raise the flag and make people aware that this was a situation and this was the solution to address the situation. And I can give you many examples of things that I've done in that way.
Yeah, sure. Give me examples. We got a lot of time.
Okay. So there was a client alert that a particular attorney issued, and it had to do with something in financial services.
Okay.
That is, if you were a retailer and you printed a customer receipt, you had to X out all the numbers except for the last four digits because people were saving those receipts and copying the credit card numbers and reuse it.
Oh, you mean there was a time where you would get a credit card receipt and it would have all the numbers on it?
That's correct.
I guess the ones they used to do by hand would have all the numbers on it, right?
No, they were all being processed by that, you know, that machine where you slide it over.
Right,
the credit card,
exactly.
Right? It was before we were dipping credit cards.
Right, exactly.
So I looked at this client alert and I thought there are many retailers out there who don't know about this and this is going to be a problem. Now, you don't buy a washing machine every day of the week, but you do go into certain kinds of establishments frequently, right? You go to the drugstore, you go to a restaurant, you go to the grocery store. So those locations are doing high volume of low price point.
Right.
And so they were the ones who are most likely to be vulnerable to a class action suit by some plaintiff's attorney who's going to say, this establishment is not following this law that you have to X out all the prior digits of the credit card receipt.
Right.
So I took this idea from the client alert and I contacted industry publications like Chain Store Age and Drugstore News and Supermarket News and Grocery Headquarters. I mean, you know, there's a publication for every
trade Trade organizations.
Trade organizations. And I said, this is an issue for your industry. Maybe you're not paying attention to it. There have been class action lawsuits about this issue. And here's an attorney who can speak to the issue. Would you like to interview this attorney? Would you like this attorney to write an article about this issue? How long should the article be? Let me know, and I'm happy to produce it for you. And by doing this, by being alert to what was an issue that was really flying under the radar, here was an authoritative source who could talk about something. And of course, I wrote most of the article because it had to be in layman's language, not in legalese.
That's one
and
of the
problems. And I was able to get him exposure in these national trade publications where people began to be aware of, you know, this is something that could affect me, even though I'm a small retailer. And they were able to take steps or call him and find out, what should I be doing? So that they could reconfigure their cash registers and be in compliance. So that's an example of recognizing that there's an issue in the marketplace. Here's an authority who can clearly and persuasively give instruction and guidance, and then making that available to the industry, not to legal publications, but to
because they're not reading the legal publications.
Right, no, because potential clients are going to be looking there. So that's an example of creating public relations content, right? I said mutually beneficial relationships.
Right, and that could be republished and repurposed. You know, it's funny, I find from CPA firms and from law firms, especially the bigger ones, I get these, I mean, I guess I'm on their newsletter list or their press releases or whatever, and they are so, what's the word, complicated. Convoluted. I'm having trouble reading it, and I'm a lawyer. I can't imagine the people on their list that are getting these things about trade and immigration and I don't know, all kinds of complicated topics where they just don't boil them down. I think that, you know, it's nice to do your own PR, but when you have a professional who says, well, wait a second. And I think it's an advantage that you don't know the area in which they practice, because then you're going to say, well, if I don't understand this, certainly the people I'm sending it to won't. And you got to boil it down. I think that's a big problem with the message that a lot of attorneys put out. They want to seem smart. And I hate to put all my colleagues on a stage like that. But I think a lot of times we have this innate desire to seem like we're smart. And we also talk in certain terms within our industry. And we put this stuff out. And then if you ask somebody who's a layman, say, do you understand what my piece is? That no, they don't know. They're not really sure what you do. They don't really understand what you're saying. And I think I will say
that there, watch my hands, I'm going to draw. There are many clients who live within the four walls of their own house.
Right.
They speak their own industry language and they talk to each other. And they don't necessarily have direct communication with outside the four walls of their house. So my role as someone who is a consultant and external to the organization is to communicate how the outside world sees what's going on inside the house. And not only that, but I open up the doors and windows and bring in some fresh air and perspective and help the two sides communicate.
Right, because it's not just getting it placed. It's making sure that the message is received and understood. I mean, it can't be valuable to the person if they have no idea what they're reading, right? So, or you're coming on, let's say even prepping somebody for an interview, whether it's a podcast or television or radio, whatever, they kind of have to be prepped, right? Because they can go on and talk in all their layman, all their, you know, industry terms, and they leave and the person's just like dumbfounded. They're like, I don't understand what you're talking about. And it's a lot of hosts won't necessarily, they feel they're embarrassing their guests, so they won't say, I have no idea what you're talking about, you know.
Yeah.
So maybe they should. But, you know, I think that a lot of that stuff is you prepping them, right? So they're ready to go on whatever it is that they're going on.
Right. So here's what I recommend if you're going to have an interview or talk to a reporter. So the first thing is you come up with 3 points that you want to talk about.
Ahead of time.
Okay. Right? These are the 3 things that I want to talk about. Then the next thing you do is for each of those points, you find a way to make yourself more memorable or more quotable. Okay. So an easy way to do that is start with the letter A. So the first A is acronym, right? Earlier today, we were talking about COVID. What is COVID? Coronavirus Disease 2019.
Right, a lot of people don't know that. Like what COVID stands for.
A lot of people don't know that. We've been saying it since February or March, but in November, no one ever heard of it. Right.
Right.
But a lot of people, we don't even call it COVID-19 anymore. We just call it COVID.
Right. Because it's synonymous.
Right. But that's an example of an acronym. If you can invent your own acronym, then you will have to explain it to the reporter.
Right. Is that good or bad?
That's a good thing.
Okay.
That's a good thing.
Okay, good. So you create your own acronym in the area in which you're talking about.
Right.
Okay.
So you start with the letter A. Okay. Then the next A after acronym is anecdote. So you think of something that you can give an example. What did I just do? I gave you the example of the client alert that I turned into an article in several different industry publications.
Right. And it was common and relatable and something that the average person deals with all the time.
Right.
Okay.
Then there's analogy. You can say that something is as clear as day or as clear as mud.
Okay.
So we have acronym, anecdote, analogy, alliteration.
Okay. What's alliteration? Like what, how it's written?
Clearly when they all written? Start with this alliteration, when they all start with the same letter, which I just did. Letter A.
Okay. Good. Right? Yeah.
Acronym, anecdote, analogy, alliteration. They all start with the letter A. Now you're going to remember it.
Yeah. I think I will. Like if anybody's driving, listening to this, don't pull over. You can listen back to it and write it down. We'll put it in the show notes too.
Right. So here's another thing, and I did this already in this discussion, and that is to come up with a visual image. I said, many clients live within the four walls of their own house.
Right.
And I drew a box, like a house.
Right.
So that's going to help you to remember what I said.
Right. Yeah. Somebody watching this video sees what exactly you're talking about.
Right. So when I work with my clients, I have them come up with three message points and something that will make them quotable or memorable, whether it's one of the four A's or the visual image, or it could be a rhyme, or it could be a reference to popular culture. It could be a pun.
Right.
And all of that makes you more memorable and more quotable.
Okay, so for a small business owner or a solo lawyer who doesn't know how to get started, maybe doesn't have much of a budget, they can't go out and hire a professional like yourself yet, that's good advice for how to kind of structure your message, right? And how to put it together. So how do you get started with the connection? If I have to do it, if I have no budget, right? Because I'm barely paying my bills as it is. And I want to get and be heard. Where do I start with connecting with people, especially since I'm not a professional like you? I'm not tied into the PR kind of wheel, so to speak.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So now I'm going to use another mnemonic, and that is one that you're familiar with, the five W's, right?
Okay.
Think like a reporter. What are the five W's, Mitch?
Writing?
No.
No.
Who?
Oh, what, when, where, not how. How's not a W.
Why?
Who, what, when, where, why? Who, what, when, where, why is, we don't need the how.
Right.
Okay.
So those are the five W's. So this is what you think about if you want to be seen in the news. Who do you want to see you? Right? So is it your employees? Well, you know, you can talk to them through the company newsletter. Right. Is it your current clients? Then it's your newsletter. Is it your prospective clients? Now you have to figure out what are they reading. Are they reading supermarket news, chain store rage, drugstore news, and so on and so forth. So that's the who. Now, where are they looking for information? Oh, well, I skipped ahead. What is it that you want to tell them? So it has to be something that is, you know, timely and is going to be tied to saving time, saving money, or making more money.
Right. It's got to be relevant to them.
Wall Street,
right.
And that's what people care about. Save time, save money, make more money.
Okay, yeah. Those are the three like big ones.
Yeah. So that's who, that's what. So when? Is this time sensitive? Is it related to the end of the year, which is when we're talking now in December. Is it related to taxes? So it's something that you want to do at the end of the year or before April. Is it related to a holiday, or is it evergreen and timeless? Right.
Okay.
So you have to think about what.
Right.
So that's who, what, when, where. Where are they looking for information, as I said before? And then why? Why will they care? Because they will save time, save money, and make more money. Right. So now we have thought about who we're targeting, what we want to tell them. Is it time sensitive? Is there a regulation or a law that they have to be in compliance with? Why they're going to care, where they're going to be looking for information, and so on. Now that you have that, you have to locate those publications and the reporters within those publications,
right,
or on those media platforms.
That's a challenge.
Well, you have to look on the actual website of the publication or in the physical publication and look at the masthead and look at the topics and see who is writing on that subject. Because if they're writing about children and you're interested in seniors, then that's not going to fly.
Right.
So you have to figure that out. Now, there are directories to which one can subscribe, like I do, and they list every publication that you can think of and then some, and they list the reporter's contact information, their email address, their phone number, and so on, and also what topics they tend to cover. So,
So that's
one thing that you can do. Or you can, you know, do it on a one-by-one basis, as I said, by reading the publication carefully and seeing who it is that you should contact.
Right.
So now we've done the framework.
Okay.
Now, what are we going to tell them? For that, I have a tool. It's called a media profile. And you're somewhat familiar with this, and
yep,
we're going to provide it in the show notes. And what the media profile does is it introduces you in a professional way, so that the reporter will get the idea that they want to jump on this right away, or they're going to keep you in mind for when this topic comes up or for when they have time to deal with it later on. The first part of the media profile is your contact information. You have your name, the name of your company, your email address.
That would seem important.
Right. And if you're a lawyer, then you have to have the address of your law firm. You don't want to be thinking this is not an advertisement, but you want to be careful that it's not seen as an advertisement. You want to put that down.
Right. Well, there are definitely issues depending on your profession that you have
to pay
attention to. Yeah.
Right. So the next part is to give a broad description, maybe 3 to 5 sentences, of your background and the kinds of things that you are involved in, whether it's, you know, operations or sales or, you know, what kind of industry you work in and so on and so forth.
Like a summary, like you do at the beginning of a resume type of a thing.
Right.
So if that's all they read, they'll know enough about you.
Right.
Okay.
And then the next thing is to be a little more specific about within the industry, about what you work on.
Okay.
And you put 3 to 5 bullet points there.
Like areas of expertise that I am familiar with, that type of thing.
Right.
Okay.
Then the next thing that you put is key topics, hot issues, trends, things that people are not paying attention to, but they need someone to explain it to them so that they will understand how important it is, right? Reporters know what already happened. Everybody knows what already happened.
Yeah, big deal, right?
Right. Reporters want to know what's going to happen before it happens.
Right.
And then they can give their readers the scoop. So that's what you want to talk about, is 3 to 5 bullet points of what are the trends and the issues that only someone deeply immersed in the industry can understand and appreciate and will act on.
Now, these are things that you can talk about, right? You're basically saying,
right,
okay, I'll talk about these. Right. Got it. Okay.
Right. Then the next section, I like to include a quote of maybe 50 or 75 words that will give the reporter, you are a real person.
Is a quote from someone else about you, or is this your own quote?
No, a quote from yourself.
On whatever topic.
On whatever topic, right?
Okay.
Like, companies in this industry have to focus on this and this kind of situation, because if they don't, you know, terrible things will befall them, and so on and so forth.
Now, will the reporter in some cases just quote you from your media sheet and just, no?
No, that's to provoke interest in talking with you.
Okay, got it.
Right. And then at the very end, you put the name of the person who is your assistant. or your public relations consultant, because you're a busy executive and you may not take your own phone calls.
Well, that's our now, leave now make it look that way at least.
Yeah, right. So I have developed this formula, and I have dealt with reporters very successfully with this formula. And in fact, I once heard a reporter speak to a group called the Law Firm Media Professionals. And this is what he said. I want to get a 50-word summary of what an attorney knows about a subject to determine whether it is worth talking to the attorney.
Okay, on that particular topic. So if I'm an expert on entrepreneurship, I put a 50-word summary, then the guy evaluates you from that because he doesn't have time to call everybody, interview you. Yeah, right. Okay, that makes sense.
Right. So what I've explained is obviously more than 50 words, but you can see that a reporter wants to get this kind of outline.
Right.
But they can determine whether it's going to be worthwhile to talk to you because the reporter is making a decision. Should I call this person that I already know? Or should I get to know this other person who seems like they know, right? And if you want to be the one the reporter calls, then you have to introduce yourself in this professional way so that you talk about what other people need to know and why the reporter should call you, Mitch, and not your colleague down the hall or your competitor across town.
Right, because you want to seem compelling. You want to seem like you know what you're talking about, that you have, I don't know if you're not an expert, but you're certainly knowledgeable in the area.
Right. And that you have your finger on the pulse of trends that people need to know more about.
Makes sense. So I think I have to go back and redo my profile a little bit because you just taught me some more things that, because you were helping me with my profile and I think I want to change some things and update it a little bit. Now, how did you end up? So why the small attorney? Now I will comment, I do know from statistics that like 80% of the population in the United States are solo attorneys or very small firms. You know, Am Law, big corporate, government, very small percentage of the legal profession. But how did you end up? Why do you want to work with all the attorneys that can't pay? We're all starving. So how did you end up? Yeah, of course they pay. I'm kidding. But how did you end up like working with the small, you know, small business attorney, really the guy who's running his own shop or working with a couple of attorneys?
Okay. It's a very simple answer, Mitch. Okay. You know, when I was last at the agency, it ended in December 2008. In fact, more or less around the date that we're talking today.
Okay.
So there was a financial crisis at that time.
Yeah. The mortgage business of right things were collapsing, mortgages, properties. Yeah.
Right. And so a lot of law firms were laying off their marketing staff and were cutting back their budgets on their marketing staff. That's why I was let go from my agency. There was another person laid off at the same time. So looking for my next opportunity, you know, there weren't too many large law firms who were going to be adding to staff, especially someone who had a few gray hairs like I do.
Right.
So there you have it. A law firm that has more than 100 attorneys has a marketing professional, at least one.
Yeah, on in-house. Right.
So, you know, you have to fish where the fish are. And, you know, they weren't going to be hiring me at these other law firms. So I had to focus on the smaller firms and the solo practitioners. And what's interesting to me is that, you know, there's a variety of experience. I've dealt with attorneys who have an employment practice or who have a litigation practice. I'm dealing with someone now who advises families and students who have been abused by their coach in sports.
Sexual abuse, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. That's a very big area.
Not necessarily sexual, but there's different
some sort of right abuse,
right.
Yeah.
Right. So I get to see a wide variety of practices by working with attorneys who have a solo practice or a part of a small firm. The other thing is that they don't have enough activity to keep me busy. So it's on a project basis.
Right. You're not on full-time retainer to small attorneys. They can't do that.
Right. So that means I have to be very industrious and, you know, be marketing myself in a variety of ways so that more people will be thinking of me. And when they have an interesting case, then they will find me or refer me on. So, you know, there's a matrimonial attorney of my acquaintance. I helped him publish an article in the New York Law Journal. And last week he referred a client to me, someone who's in a difficult matrimonial situation and, you know, wants to get the word out for, you know, for her own reasons. But besides that, I've written a series of articles for the New Jersey Law Journal and right. for the New York Law Journal.
Right. You do your own PR. You don't have to hire a professional. You are a professional.
That's right. And the idea was that by publishing these articles, which were called Best Practices for the Solo Practice, I would be regularly getting my name in front of attorneys who had a solo practice. And then they would think, that Janet Falk, she's giving me advice on my solo practice. Maybe I should talk to her about what I could be doing.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000, that's L-A-W to 21000, to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
Yeah.
And in those articles, what I did very cleverly was I crowdsourced from attorneys who had a solo practice, what do you think about X, right? So one that appears today, in fact, in the New Jersey Law Journal is about fees. Should you have a retainer? Should you have a flat fee? Should you have an hourly fee? And I got six attorneys to weigh in on the subject on how it is that they approach the fee question. And some of them have changed their mind and gone from one basis to another.
Yeah.
And I also asked, you know, do you think about raising your fees? And some of them said, yes, at the end of the year, I look at how I've been spending my time.
Right. Yeah. A lot of attorneys don't. Then they go 10 years down the road. They're still charging the same hourly rate they did 10 years ago. That's ridiculous.
I know.
Everyone else is raising your fees on you.
Right. You got to keep up with the market.
Yeah. Yeah. And, right. and keep up with the people that are charging you. Everyone else charges me. They raise their. I remember I had a guy come back to me 12, 15 years later. He asked me for, maybe it was for his will or whatever. So I told him what I charged. He goes, oh my God, you were charging half that. I go, yeah, but that was 12 years ago.
Right.
You know, you can't operate that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. So in this article in the New Jersey Law Journal, you can see, you know, Janet Falk with a practice in employment law located in Newark. And then you would have my quote. And then you would have the name of my firm. And it would be a link in the article to the URL of my website. So what a win-win for the attorney.
Right, because you're promoting them. You're promoting yourself. That's a very top of mind and topical, you know, issue. I talk to attorneys about it all the time because we're all trying to figure out how to. I'm very much, I like the idea of a subscription model as a business attorney. So I try to bring clients on a retainer basis where they pay me a fee for a certain amount of hours every month, you know, emails, and then everything else they get would be discounted of what I do. What I don't do, I can't provide to them. But and then I have a better handle on what they're doing. It's better recurring revenue for me. It's generally cheaper for them because there's no like stop in the road where I have to spend 20 hours trying to figure something out. I already know what's going on in their life. And I've read that, you know, the attorneys I know that have subscription-based models, it's just a much, you know, it's less stressful for the attorney because they have regular income. It's better for the client because you know what they need. And it's a way to, you know, budget things. So I don't know. I'd be curious. I want to read the article and see what everybody has a different opinion about it. No, I just charge hourly. Oh, I just charge flat fee. I hate hourly billing. It's just like something. It's like a total conflict of interest, right? Supposed to do the best job for the least price, and then you bill them hourly.
Right. I mean, but just because in effect, you are penalizing yourself for being efficient and knowledgeable.
Right. And if you're working for a little bit bigger firm, you're serving two masters, right? So you got to do it efficiently and cost effectively, but the firm is pulling at you to bill as much as you can to pay the overhead and keep things going and make profits for the partners.
Right. So, you know, so talking about working efficiently and knowledgeably, I'm sure you remember what Vladimir Horowitz said. It's not the notes, it's the spaces between the notes.
Right. It's true. And I think that's why, like, I would rather manage my own time on a flat fee basis, knowing that I'm getting paid well and can do the job as quickly as possible to get it back to the client, not adding time. And I mean, I do have hourly billing. There's some things I just can't do on a flat fee because I don't know how much work is going to be involved, but it's not something I enjoy. I hate keeping track of all that stuff. I haven't sent out invoices and, you know, it's just much easier the other way. And I really like the subscription model. There's a book. There was two books. One was called The Game Changing Attorney. Forget the author. And then there was another called, it was about subscription modeling. I have to check. It was written by a guy, John Warillo, I think. And it's called a branding person had recommended it to me. It is called The Automatic Customer. And it's about building subscription business in any industry. You don't have to be Amazon to do it, although that's a brilliant example. But I think attorneys can do that. Not all attorneys, but I think a lot of attorneys can do that in their small practice. But I want to ask you the entrepreneur question, right? So obviously, when it comes to going out on your own, since this is the accidental entrepreneur, and you're starting your own consultancy, the PR, the marketing, you have that covered, right? Because that's your area of expertise. So business development, I would guess. How did you get started in the first day? You said, okay, I'm going out on my own. You probably didn't have a lot of clients, right? Because you were working for larger law firms. They were now not using you anymore. So you had to find the local attorneys. Where did you start? Did you write a business plan? I'm curious as to how you built that yourself.
Well, you're asking me to reflect back on 12 years.
Yeah, so well, in 12 years.
It's a little difficult for me to think about. But I'm sure that one thing that I did was I made a list of as many people as I could.
Right.
And, you know, notified them that I was, you know, working independently.
Yeah.
And then the next thing I did was I created a website. And I thought it was very important for me to have a website because that way I could show that I was walking the walk and talking the talk.
Right. It creates that, you know, that you're a professional, you're out there, especially nowadays, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So I want to view this a little bit differently and talk about, you know, what I have learned, that there are five ways of getting business. So
good.
So the first way is networking. And as I said, you know, I determined that I was going to get in touch with as many people as I could.
Right. Well, I think people overlook that. They overlook the value of their network. They're like, well, I don't really know any people. But that's not true. Most of us know 250 to 300 people that really know who you are. And if they each know 200, that goes a long way.
I have news for you, Mitch. It's more like 5,000.
See, people just, they don't think they know anybody. And if you really sit them down, they come up with this huge list. Oh, no, wait, I remember Janet. I met her here through this event. Oh, at that event, I met other people. And they just don't think about it.
Right. I mean, there's all the people that you worked with, whether they were on your team at your company or they were vendors or they were editors that you met here and there. Right. So there's a variety. So let's just leave networking there. Then there's speaking. Right. So here I am. I'm talking to you on your podcast.
Right.
And I'm a former college professor and I give workshops.
Yeah.
So I give workshops to bar associations.
Yeah.
I give workshops to CLE providers.
A great way to get in front of attorneys.
Right. Sometimes I partner with another attorney and then that attorney, you know, helps me to give CLE credit through this institution.
Right.
So then the next way is writing. I mentioned that I had this column in the New York and New Jersey law journals.
Right.
I have a monthly newsletter.
Right.
I write articles for other publications. I occasionally publish content from one publication as an article on LinkedIn. I haven't done that for a while. I have to go back to that. Then another
LinkedIn's an easy way to do it, right? Because you could publish articles and the stuff gets out there, and right, you know, you don't have to ask a publication to put you in there.
Right. But it's not just that you can publish what you want on LinkedIn. You have to promote it.
Yeah.
You can't just let it sit there.
Right. It's going to some magically they're going to find it. Right.
Yeah.
There's a lot of noise. Right. Everyone's putting stuff out there. You got to do something with it.
Right. OK, so let's recapitulate. So there's networking, speaking, writing. Now, the fourth way is being active in the trade association of your target market.
Okay.
So I have joined several groups. One is called Deliberate Solos.
Yeah, you introduced me to Zara.
Right, right. Yeah. Zara Watkins.
Right.
And Dana Heights are the co-founders.
Yeah.
So that's here in New York, but they also have a LinkedIn page and people share ideas there. And the idea is that they will, be able to contact each other if they have a quiz question about intellectual property or about tax or, real estate or something like
that. Now, you talk about networking, and I know I'm interrupting you, but so I connect with Zara because of you. And then we had a one-on-one. Now, she writes for like appellate attorneys, and she does briefs. I've now connected her with several groups, a group out of Florida and a couple of other groups. Because they're all litigators. So some of them are appellate attorneys, and they're like, "Oh, so she's meeting all these other people."
How generous of you, Mitch! How generous of you!
Of course, I want to help her. She helps me. That's what networking is all about. But I met her because we met. And who introduced us? Was it Tina?
Jennifer Gelman.
Jennifer. Okay. Yeah. So it all kind of comes around the circle. Networking is very powerful if you follow through on it.
Right. But this was the way I got into that network. The trade association of my target market.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I joined another group, which may be interesting to some in your audience, and that's called Women Owned Law.
Oh, I haven't heard about that one. Okay.
Right. So those are women who are partners or who have their own law firm or who have their own small firm or who are a women-owned business catering to the legal market.
So it's not just lawyers, it's people that service that marketplace as well. Sounds like my friend Bill runs the Legal Resource Network. I don't know if
you know him too.
One. Yeah,
I'm in that one.
So you're right. So you're on. Yeah, right. I remember I saw you there. I've been there in a couple of weeks. But you're on the service side. You service the legal profession. And there's all the other lawyers there. Yeah.
Right.
That's a good one.
Right. That's the trade association of your target market. Right?
Yeah.
And then the fifth way is everything that you do, networking, speaking, writing, being active in the trade association of your target market, you promote it online.
Right.
So,
you're speaking
today,
somewhere, you put it up everywhere, right?
Right. So today on LinkedIn, I mentioned thank you to, and I named the six attorneys who contributed to my article on fees in the New Jersey Law Journal. And now when they write back on LinkedIn and post and say, thank you, Jennifer, for including me, then the people that they're connected to on LinkedIn are going to see.
Right.
If they didn't see it in the New Jersey Law Journal themselves, now they're going to see that they were.
Because it's their circle.
Right, right.
Yeah, LinkedIn's very powerful that way if you use it properly.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So I won't say that I did all these things when I first set up my practice, but this is what I encourage other people to do as they think about growing their business, is to use these five ways to do this. Now, every Thursday, I remind myself to look at what I call my marketing RBI. What did I do this week in these five spheres?
Okay.
And if I'm short on one of them, then I still have Friday to hit it out of the park.
That's a good habit to be in.
Yeah, that's an analogy. This is how marketing is like baseball.
That's a good analogy. Right?
You think about your RBI. These are the five things that you could be doing every week.
Right. Consistency is important too when it comes to all this stuff.
You don't have to do every one every day, but over the course of the week, you should find a way that you can do, these things.
Yeah.
Networking, speaking, writing, trade association of your target market, and promote yourself online.
You know, it's funny. I'm a big advocate of, you start a business, you write a business plan, you all put all the pieces together. And I did over the summer, probably should do it again, maybe in the spring, I think I told you, but I was doing like a business plan challenge where I said to people, listen, we're going to write a business plan in 5 days. So I got some attorneys and other professionals. Should I be doing this? Like, I have a law practice. What do I need a business plan for? I said, well, of course you need a business plan. It just may be focused differently because, your finances may be simpler as an attorney. You may have your insurance, your rent, you know, your other services, your online things you pay for, and that's it. But you do have to pay attention to the marketing and the business, because what you've talked about, those five things, it's really business development. It's just different ways of doing it, right? Thought leadership, kind of, and it's all driving things into your funnel, so to speak. And I think that from a systematic basis, as professionals, we often, I don't know if it's a word, we overlook it. We just kind of, we don't do it on a focused, systematic basis. We kind of like, what's the word? Like bird dog business. We, you know, a lot of guys I know do that. They'll go to a networking event. They'll meet some people. They'll get their card. I don't know if they have a newsletter or not, because I never get the newsletter. So I don't know if they do anything with the card. Maybe they connect with them on LinkedIn, but I think it's important to take those people and put them on a mailing list or a keep in touch list or something. Mm-hmm. And I have a process over the years, because I've fallen short too, like everyone else. But I think that that's the, it's not that people don't need a business plan. It's the focus of that business plan that's going to vary based on, because yours was heavily on development. You didn't have like startup costs. You didn't have to rent an office. You didn't have all these things. Yours was, well, how the heck do I get clients? Mm-hmm. And you had a systematic way to doing it, and you're still doing that. And I think that a lot of professionals specifically fall short. They're very good at doing the legal work, right? They're out there, they're doing their stuff, and it's a yo-yo thing, right? They're real busy, and then they don't get so busy, and they weren't doing the marketing. Now they got to do marketing. So it's up and down. They have to have a system that they can keep going somehow, so they don't have those ups and downs. Would you agree? You see that with a lot of lawyers?
Yeah, exactly. But you know, that goes for any business.
True too. Yeah.
Any business. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have a colleague. Her name is Sandra Holtzman.
Yeah, I know Sandy.
You know her too?
Yeah, she's either coming on my podcast, I got to look at my calendar, or was on my podcast.
Okay, so then you know her book. It's called Lies Startup. Lies startups tell themselves so that they don't have to market.
Hold on a second. No, I don't have it here. Yeah, I have. You know what else I did with Sandy? She was on my podcast. I was a guest speaker at one of her courses in the city. Mm-hmm. She had me come on Zoom and I talked to the kids about, because she's teaching some entrepreneurship stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's great.
Yeah. This is what I often say, Mitch. New York is the world's biggest little village. If
it's,
you are active in networking,
yeah,
you will find that you overlap.
It gets small very quickly. Yeah. You're right. You're right. That's very funny. Yeah. Because I don't think you introduced me to Sandra. I don't think so. I met her through someone else. Maybe through Jen. I don't remember. Yeah. I can't trace everything anymore. We could get on the phone, talk for 20 minutes, figure out how we met.
Right. Right. But, you know, on the other hand, when you do get a new client, then you want to know
where they came from,
came back to you.
Very much so.
Because you want to rinse and repeat.
Right, right. First, you want to thank the connection you have and maintain that connection. And then you want to figure out, well, is that a regular avenue for obtaining clients? So then I do want to repeat that. Or is it just a freak thing, you know? Mm-hmm. I agree. A lot of people don't analyze that either.
Right, right.
You know, you've got to analyze.
I want to go back to what you said about collecting business cards. It's very important to have a newsletter.
Yeah.
You should have one at least quarterly. Of course, I'm a writer, so I have one monthly.
Right.
But if you can't do it yourself, then at least circulate articles that other people write that you think people ought to be following. Do I have to explain to your audience why it's important to have a newsletter?
Yeah, I know why it's important, but let's talk about that.
Okay. So one of the reasons why it's important to have a newsletter is that you control the distribution.
Right.
We said earlier that I published on LinkedIn that I had this article and I thanked the six attorneys who were in the article. Right? Only 9% of your contacts on LinkedIn are going to see what you published.
Yeah,
there.
Even see it, let alone look at it, because there's competition for the feed. Right.
Right. Right. So that's why 91% of them are not going to see it.
Right.
Right. Right. And on Facebook, if you post things on Facebook, only 2%.
So it's even lower, huh?
It's even lower.
Because it's busier, yeah.
No, not because it's busier. It's because the algorithm controls,
penalizes you.
You sweat.
Yeah,
I mean, if I don't post actively, then
you're not important to them.
You may see what I'm interested in, you won't see it because Facebook doesn't think that we're in active communication.
Right. They want to promote the people that are actively using their platform.
Right, right. So a newsletter, you control who sees it and when they see it.
Yeah.
And 90% of the time, at least, it goes into that person's inbox.
Yeah.
So what would you rather have? 90%, 9%, or 2%.
Right. And you have to build a mailing list from that over time.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. Okay. And then the second thing is you control all the content. So you can decide exactly what you want to talk about and, you know, make it in a way that's going to capture the attention of your audience and have the call to action of what it is that you want them to do. Do you want them to call? Do you want them to email? Do you want them to download something? Do you want them to go to a page on your website? You know, they will only do that if you clearly tell them what it is that they need to do next. Now, we're all inundated with newsletters. You know, I appreciate that. But even if they delete it, they saw it.
Right. I have mortgage people send me stuff all the time. I remember them. I don't always read their newsletter, but I know they're alive. Mm-hmm. They're sending it to me. I've had in the past when I didn't do this, I would have people say to me, oh, yeah, you know, I sent that that piece of business to Janet because I just spoke to Janet. I hadn't heard from you in a long time and I didn't think of you. Well, it was my fault.
Right.
You know, there's a very good book called The Referral of a Lifetime. Have you heard of that one?
No.
It's all about building a keep in touch program with your existing connections.
Right.
It's very simple. It's like 100 pages. It's written like a parable. It's one of the Ken Blanchard series types of books. Mm-hmm. And I it's like my favorite, one of my favorite books about that. Just what you said, building a marketing list. I mean, if you look at anything, how to promote your podcast, how to promote this. The first thing everyone says is build a mailing list, build a marketing list so you can get your message directly to these people. And people still don't do it. I mean, I don't know what they do with these cards, but.
Right, right. So I did write a newsletter called Your Goldmine of 5,000 Contacts. And I talk about all the many people that you know. You know, many times people are emailing each other and they haven't moved the contact into their directory of contacts or into their CRM.
Right.
And, you know, that's something that, of course, you need to do on a periodic basis.
Definitely.
And now there is another issue, which is, suppose you've gone through your list of contacts and you realize that you haven't been in touch with someone for months.
Right. Maybe years.
Or longer.
Right.
Or longer, right?
Right.
So what is it? This is the end of the year. This is the holiday season. This is the time when we go through our contacts and we decide who we're going to send a holiday greeting card to, right? Whether you send a physical card or an e-card. This is the perfect time to get in touch with those people and say, your name came to mind in a review of contacts.
Right.
Right? I mean, you know, people want to know what happened. Or it could be this. Your name came up in conversation with, that's the subject line of an email. Your name came up in conversation with, now the person wants to open the email. Who was it?
Right. Right.
And, exactly. You know, someone who is looking for an architect.
Right. Yeah. Okay? No,
and,
absolutely.
You know, so there are, I have a list of conversation starters to renew contacts.
Okay. Can we put a link to that article in the show notes?
Yeah, I'll send that to you.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the other thing you can say is LinkedIn suggested your name to me, or I saw your post on LinkedIn.
Right. Yeah.
By the way.
Right. Absolutely. There's a whole section of that book I just mentioned that talks about, okay, if you haven't talked to somebody for 5 years, you went to college with them, what do you say? Well, you know, you write them a letter and you say, hey, I wanted to reach out. I'm sorry I haven't stayed in touch. I was wondering what's going on in your life. Just be open and honest about it. And they might not respond, but I think in a lot of cases, most people are happy to connect with other people.
I believe that now in the time of COVID, everyone is looking for more connections.
Yeah, there's no question about it. That even accelerated. So.
And, you know, I mean, and this is really a yes, no issue, right? They're either going to say, yes, how nice to hear from you, or they're going to delete it.
Right.
In which case,
which is fine.
Your life.
Yeah. Exactly. It's fine. It's funny. There's a gentleman in my office here he's in marketing, actually. They do, you know, marketing programs for a large company. So I was on a call last night. Was it Jen's? Yeah, maybe it was either Jen's or not. I was on two calls that overlap. One that overlapped Jen's meeting. So I saw he has a mask on. Yeah, Jen Gilman does her Thursday night ones, but I had one that started at 4:30, so it overlapped. I was late to Jen's meetings. I don't remember if my friend Rod was in Jen's meeting or in this first meeting. So, but when you're online and people have masks on and stuff, because he was at a place where he had to wear a mask, you don't recognize people. So mm-hmm. I didn't recognize. So then he says, oh, I'm in Mitch's office space. And I'm like, who is that? And I realized it's him. I saw him this morning and he's like, yeah, I really need to do more of that. Mm-hmm. You know, 'cause he's just getting, I said, well, why don't you just, you know, zip me over an email to remind me. I have 20 groups that I can connect you with that you can go online and do all kinds of, 'cause you know, people are just saying, yeah, I need to do that. Just do it.
Right, right.
Don't tell you something you need to.
Right, right. And I always believe that it's not the first person that you meet, but
no,
it's someone else in their circle.
Yep. It's a couple of degrees away.
That is how we met, even though we're both in the legal resource network.
Right.
And we didn't connect through that.
We connected through. And look at Zara. She started her own group and she didn't even know about the other groups that I have. And I'm sure mm-hmm. she knows other, you know, so she was like, wow. And then I didn't know about Deliberate Solos until you told me about them. So I told my other group, my Florida group, and they're like, oh, yeah, we want to meet her. Maybe we'll go to her group.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're not bound by borders now because of Zoom.
Exactly.
Online networking.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I have a client that's a professional membership organization. It's called 100 Women in Finance. They started out as 100 women in hedge funds, and then they grew. And now they have almost 20,000 members in 26 locations.
Just women in finance.
Yeah, women in finance.
Okay.
They could be portfolio managers. They could be analysts. They could be marketers. They could be compliance.
But they work in the finance industry.
Right. They could be
CPAs.
Real estate finance. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's a broad category.
Right.
Yeah.
So working with this group, we are developing an article for publication. I'll just leave that there. And one of the things that they mentioned was that in this time of COVID, they have been getting such great speakers because speakers are not bound by geography.
Right.
And they're not bound by travel.
Yeah.
And so they have had really, you know, top line speakers in the world of finance coming to them, or not necessarily coming to them, but being open to speaking to the organization.
Right. Yeah, because it helps them. They don't have to stay anywhere, take a plane, travel. You don't have to pay them.
Right.
I've been doing that with some of the networking groups I'm on. I bring on all kinds of people that I've met through my podcast, a sleep expert, a memory expert, you know, all these different types of people, a hypnotist, because people are looking for interesting, branding specialist. Somebody had brought on, I didn't find her, but she's great. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's definitely that room. I did get one guy who said, I'll do it, but I charge $6,000. I go, well, we pay $25 a quarter, so I don't think we're going to have enough money to pay mm-hmm. you to come on. So he was an author, but. But we've had some interesting authors. If you're familiar with Mike Michalowicz, have you heard of Mike?
Yeah.
He writes a lot of business books. Profit First, The Toilet Paper Entrepreneur, The Pumpkin Plan. Really well-written, easy to understand business books about running your mm-hmm. business. Well, he happens to be in Boonton, New Jersey. And then I connected to him with somebody else. And he came to speak to us on his books. And it was great. You wouldn't normally get that.
Right. And as I'm saying, even leaders in the field of finance are making themselves more available. Because
right.
they want to be seen and, you know, be supporting their clients and be supporting this women's professional membership organization, 100 Women in Finance.
Sure. And they want to keep their names out there. They probably had speaking engagements they were getting paid for that got canceled. They're stuck home. So they want to keep their name out there too, keep their mm-hmm. marketing going. So when budgets come back and they start hiring people again.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, Janet, this is all great, great, great stuff. Let's put some links in the show notes. To some of your downloads, the media profile, the articles, and hopefully we'll be helping some of the attorneys out there. And this is not just lawyers. I mean, everything you talked about is valuable to really any entrepreneur, any small business owner out there.
I do have some small business owners among my clientele. Can I tell you one story?
Sure.
Yeah. So this fellow had a business, and it was a niche business in the credit card industry.
Mm-hmm. Like processing, credit card processing?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
But he doesn't do the processing. He used to work for one of the major processors, and he would analyze your statement and tell you how much extra you were paying for all these other bells and whistles and how much above the industry standard you were paying.
Yeah.
Because the way those relationships work is they incrementally increase you twice a year.
Yeah, it's a terrible business.
Points.
Yeah.
A few basis points every year,
a lot.
Every 6 months, pretty soon you're talking about real money that you're leaving on the table.
Right. Okay.
So he had a few hotel industry clients. major hotels.
Right. They're doing a lot of processing.
When you go to a hotel, it's 80% of your tab.
Right.
You got the room, you got the nightclub, you got the spa, you got the gift shop, you got the equipment rental, whatever.
Yeah, it's all credit card. Nobody's paying cash at a hotel. Yeah.
Right. So if you're the hotel, you're paying this processing fee. And with these hotel clients, he analyzed their statements, their merchant services statements, and he found ways that they were overpaying. And he negotiated with their credit card processor to bring down the terms. And he saved them hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Right, I'm sure.
Right. So I took this case study, which included testimonials from the two hotel CFOs, and I contacted hotel industry publications, and I asked them if they were interested. And I got three articles in hotel industry publications about this idea and this service. And then I had the testimonials from the clients. So to use an analogy, it was like a Christmas gift.
Right.
It all came in a bow. It all came in a box with a bow for the reporter. It was very easy. They had the idea, they had the source, and they had the client.
Right.
So three articles in hotel industry publications targeting hotel CFOs. Mitch, how many phone calls did he get?
I would hope a lot. Did he?
Give me a number.
20.
800.
800?
800.
I didn't think there were that many CEOs of, you know, hotel chains out there.
Well, you don't have to be a big hotel chain. You
right.
could be one hotel.
A mom and pop, a local.
Yeah. In fact, the ones that he quoted were high-end single hotels.
So he got 800 connection, not necessarily did business with all of them, but
800 incoming phone calls.
Now, wow.
Right. Now, Mitch, ask yourself, what would it cost him to buy a list of hotel CFOs, to email them, to call them? Would he have gotten 800 responses?
No. And he'd probably need 50,000 that he'd send to and maybe get a 100.
Right.
Yeah, because the article created a belief that he knew what he was talking about. He was became the expert. They're right. Like, well, we want to talk to this guy. Not like they got a postcard in the mail that said, hey, we could save you on your processing fees. Yeah, okay, everybody can.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Not only that, because these were very well-known hotels, high-end hotels.
Right. That even raised, made it more.
Yeah, made it more.
Yeah, because this guy's working with the top in the business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. That's the dream that everyone wants. That's right.
Right. So what I'm saying is that if you can figure out who you want to talk to, what you want to tell them, right? Do you want to talk to hotel CFOs? You want to tell them how they can save money when it's immaterial, it's, you know, evergreen.
Right.
You know, where are they looking for information? Hotel industry publications. And why should they care? Save money. I mean, save hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, you know how he makes his money. He gets a percentage.
It's a percentage, right, of course. Right. And to the CEO, they look like a hero because they're always looking to cut their bottom, you know, improve their bottom line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's a good story. All right. Well, why don't we leave it there?
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.